info on placing your lunch or dinner order, visit vaqueroscafe.com. It's Light the Tower.
Say goodnight to this one.
Your daily look around the world of sports with Horns 24/7 insider Jeff Howe on your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Light it up on a Thursday. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. I am Jeff Howe. However you're listening, wherever you're listening, we just thank you so much for being a part of today's presentation. As we motor along, we're part of our live local coverage throughout the day here on the Horn. We have lost our way. Craig is on vacation. We're in that two-week stretch where Craig goes away, goes to the Carolina coast, or is going to Fenway Park for a Billy Joel concert at some point during this stretch. But Craig will be back in a couple weeks, but I have called in reinforcements. Joining me today, very, very thankful to him for extending his stay here at the ARN compound and the Horn Studios. One of my favorite people in the world. I consider him a mentor in this business that is radio and broadcasting. Bucky Godbolt. Bucky,
thank you, Jeff. By the way, you're doing a fantastic job with Craig.
Thanks, Buck.
Keeping him in check, keeping his ego down to a level where it should be.
Good job
by you.
One of the first really cool experiences I had doing radio was across town when you were doing post game 1 year, the 2011 season, and it got to the point where it said, hey, Bucky doesn't have a co-host for post game. The guy brought it to me. Do you want to do it? I said, sure, why not? I'll come in here and talk football with the Buck. Bucky, I learned so much about football and broadcasting and life during that one season doing post game with you. So I do cherish that season.
That was a time when I didn't know what 20 personnel was. And that's how you guys talk about 11 personnel, 20 personnel, 27 personnel. I just know them as two tight ends, four wide. That's how I still say it. When I listen to you guys and you guys go through the whole, 20 personnel and that's 26 person, I'm like, what in the God's name are they? You mean they're talking about, oh, this many wide receivers and this many tight ends and the running back moving out to a wide receiver? I'm still talking about how many wide outs they have.
You know what I remember?
The Z and the X and the tight end.
The H back.
The Y's and all that stuff. Yeah.
You know what I remember most about that?
And thank you, by the way. I appreciate those compliments. Thank you.
You know what I remember most about the season we did postgame, Buck? I remember I forget which Texas game it was, but I'm leaving the stadium. I'm walking into the door and my phone is blowing up. I'm getting all these updates. And the first thing I say to you when I get in the studio is, Bucky, have you seen all this stuff going on at Penn State? All these allegations about Penn State? What is all this about? And yeah, if only we knew at that point what we would know later. That was, I remember, one of the biggest sports stories of our lifetime unfolding during that season. But we're not here to talk about the Penn State deal or the 2011 season. We'll talk college football in 2021 and beyond with Bucky. Before we do that, though, got to remind you, Specs text line is open, 337-3776. Your questions, comments, feedback are welcome. We will give away two copies of Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine. This is the penultimate day we're giving away copies of DCTF. Once we give away that second copy tomorrow, you got to go pay full price for it at the newsstand. You cannot get it for the great price of $3.99, which we have it for you here on Light the Tower. So we'll give away two copies today. We'll have a couple of Longhorn notebooks. We will have Inconceivable. And, Bucky, I'll go ahead and get this out of the way right now. CB, among others, has requested. They said, hey, since it's Inconceivable and Bucky is with you, can you get him to tell the baked potato story? And I'm going to say no.
Say no. Just say
I'm
no.
I'm going to say no right. Because
that's around Thanksgiving time.
You and I made a deal that the show before you leave for Thanksgiving,
yes,
that's when we do the baked potato story. As everybody's going to the grocery store and buying their You're getting your sweet potatoes and your turkey.
Absolutely.
And, you know, your corn,
can't
whatever.
Can't tell that in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
That's not a camp-out story, although it was a camp-out.
Well, it is a camp-out story.
Yeah, it was a camp-out story.
But no, we will it's a Thanksgiving tradition here at the Horn where we'll let Bucky tell the baked potato story.
The rudest thing that I've ever done to an individual in my lifetime.
It is.
I've done some rude things, too.
Bucky, it's one of the worst things I've ever heard of a human being doing to another human being. It's like one of the best and worst things simultaneously.
Dude, it was the best thing I've ever done to anybody. What do you mean, the worst?
It is like,
it shouldn't even come under the guidance of... It was the worst thing. It was a beautiful gesture on my part.
Like, the look on someone's face.
Snoop has no clue, but it's.
When they open up that foil expecting to get a nice baked potato.
They did get a baked potato.
Of a very, very different kind. Snoop, we'll let you hear the baked potato story at some point. Speaking of Snoop, got to bring in our esteemed producer behind the glass. He is the publisher, curator, otherwise majordomo of everything FlexATX, FlexATX.com, at FLXATX on Twitter and Instagram. Got some the stuff done with some fine young men from San Marcos High School yesterday coming up here and doing some stuff for Flex. Snoop Daniel is our producer.
I got paid.
Yeah, Snoop payday.
Direct deposit, 6 this morning.
Snoop promptly raided the vending machine downstairs. After
not just one bag of chips, 3.
That's how Snoop rolls on payday.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah. So, Snoop, what do you got going on with Flex right now? You did some stuff with San Marcos High School yesterday?
Yeah, I did some stuff with a few schools yesterday out at Z-Tejas. A big thank you to Dr. Greg Eckert and the Brain Vault family, which helped put that on. Woo Woo Burgers, shout out. It's a new ghost restaurant. This is one of the cool things that people do today in the pandemic era. They instead of opening like a hard area store, you just have a place online. It's called Woo Woo Burgers. So that's what Z-Tejas is doing. So.
Awesome. Dr. Eckert, good man.
Yeah. It was a family event yesterday.
So, Snoop, you're getting ready to Monday. You'll be out and about in a couple of 2 days. You got Hayes and Bowie on Monday?
Yes, sir. Okay. 6 a.m. down with Coach Les Goad and at 7 a.m. with Jeff Abels.
It's that time of year, Buck. You ready for another year?
Oh, I was excited.
Travis football.
Snoop knows this, and part of what, what we do here in the community. I got a chance to get out 75 pair of football shoes to kids yesterday, really brand new Nikes all over the place. And Navarro High School got them, and Travis High School got them. And I think today Reagan gets, they get their pick, and these are brand new. I mean, I was trying them on and talking about getting all excited. I was all giddy, like, hey, look, I'm lacing them up again.
Now
I couldn't move. I could hardly even move with those things on.
Now,
it was so much fun, though.
Back in your career, Bucky, at Boston College, were at Chestnut Hill, were you guys playing on AstroTurf?
We were playing on AstroTurf. All it was cement underneath somebody's rug with a pad, maybe on top of the cement. Yes.
Yeah.
And it was the hardest stuff I've ever been on in my life.
But you were wearing at that time, you weren't wearing cleats. You were in like the old Adidas turf shoes.
I think it was. Was it Adidas that we were with there? Yeah, Adidas. And you got one pair of shoes. Dude, you got one pair of shoes. You came into that cage, and they gave you your shoes, and you'd go in there in about game 7 and say, hey, look at this stuff is all worn out. I said, I'll see you in the spring or something, but you're not getting two pair of shoes. I'm not getting two pair of shoes. And so for these kids that got these, man, I don't know what a pair of Nikes cost these days, and I know this. This will save some mom and dad some cash for 75 kids.
Oh, yeah.
That really could use a pair of shoes. And I guarantee you, those kids go through like 3 or 4 pairs of shoes a year now, right? And
yeah.
Programs who have cash can do that. They can say, oh, here's another pair of shoes. I don't even know if the high school program gets it, or does an individual have to pay for his shoes. I know that in college, obviously, we paid for it. In high school, you definitely paid for your shoes.
Yeah, and in high school, what I did back at Florence High School, Florence, Texas, USA, I would just go into the storage area where people kept old cleats, and I would just
get old.
I would just get refurbished ones. So because Buck playing offensive line, you go through a lot of cleats. You know, the insides wear out.
You weren't getting new shoes though.
No, I wasn't buying new shoes.
Right.
I would go through about 2 or 3 pairs of refurbished cleats a year. Just
awesome.
Just kind of use the
good stuff.
The retreads.
By the way, they're saying, hey, Jeff, can we do Thursday call-ins? Let's just say no. just say we don't do call-ins.
I tend to think that more of Bucky and less of the listener usually makes for good radio.
That's just going to put us in hot water right there. They hear that, they don't like to hear that.
Well,
they want to hear them. So
it's kind of like where the Big 12 is right now, Buck. A lot of people just don't want to hear the truth. And the fact of the matter is, I know you and E. Hogan spent a great deal of time talking about this morning, but you know, it disappoints me on one hand to see the 8 remaining schools in the Big 12, and I applaud people on the flagship message board at Horns 24/7 that dubbed them the Hateful 8, the Irrelevant 8, kind of all kinds of nicknames for the 8 remaining Big 12 schools. But on the one hand, you know, it disappoints me that this is the route that the Big 12 is going to threaten litigation. And I think if you're one of the 8 remaining members in the league, or even if you're Texas and Oklahoma, this should anger you, because it took this step, Bucky, of Texas and Oklahoma leaving the league for the Big 12 to actually do something. That's just how reactive this conference has been to everything. It's the life of the Big 12 in a nutshell. And I don't know what they're fighting for at this point, what you're fighting to keep together. If I'm in a leadership position at Baylor or Texas Tech or TCU, I can't worry about, yes, you're going to get this money in the short term, but where's your athletic department going to be 10, 15 years from now? The way it's going, if you're not being proactive trying to get in another power conference, you're going to be in a division underneath where the top tier power schools are, which is that I think we all feel like that's where it's going. It's going to be some version of like a legitimate junior league to the NFL. You're going to be in the division below, and you will drift into irrelevance if you can't latch on to a power conference right now.
Well, the conference will drift into irrelevance, but there still has to be football played besides the SEC. I mean, there's football to be played all over the country. There's right. interest in there's we see that every Saturday from all levels. We saw the excitement last year of what was going on in the Sun Belt. Everybody all over the country was excited about the Sun Belt. Now, how long that lasts, who knows? But for maybe the last 2 years, they're giving us plenty of fun to watch. I mean, I never watched that much Sun,
right.
But I watched it last year. I was excited about it. I was excited for a bunch of teams in there. There were a number of teams that played really well. So they still have to play football. It's not just the SEC. It's not Texas, LSU, Alabama. Other teams play. But where are you going to join? Who are you going to jump in bed with? You've got to go somewhere. And for me, teams like Cincinnati that over the last, you know, with Coach Fickell over the last couple of years have been doing well. Houston is Houston. They love playing football in the state of Texas. TCU used to dominate that Mountain West Conference. They got to go somewhere else. And a TCU and a Houston and a Cincinnati and some of those teams like that, I don't even care if Texas Tech joined in there. That would be football that you're going to watch. Are you going to make big money? Is it going to be sustainable for your football program to sustain there? But you can join these other places. Right. But what are the little 8 now going to do? Ask some of these teams, ask Cincinnati or Houston to join. They're going to look at you and go, "What? No, I don't think so." Now, it still may be a better deal for what you're getting where you are, and you can maybe make that into something special. But is it possible, or are you as Cincinnati go, "Oh no, we're better than you guys now. I don't want to join your conference."
Yeah, and that's one of the funniest parts of this to me is the allegation, and I don't doubt that it's true, that the American is trying to pick off a few schools from the Big 12 and bolster their league, because you know, as good as that league has been, Buck, this is where we are in college football. Do you know how many teams are in the AAC? How many teams are in the American? Okay. The American's an 11-team league. It's like an unbalanced league. So if you can add, you know, 3 teams to get you to 14, or add 5 to get you to 16, okay, now you've got some more noticeable brands.
Right.
Now you're a bigger conference. The question then becomes, what kind of TV deal does a 16-team AAC get, and what are the payouts per team? You know, how big is that
pie? Depending on where part of the country,
right,
what the viewership is.
What television partners are you going to be able to partner with? So it's interesting to look at just those remaining 8 and what's going to happen to them. But I really hope that they're not seriously trying to hang on to the Big 12 and maintain relevancy.
It's got to go. I can't see Texas and Oklahoma still dealing with this stuff in 3 years from now. They're gonna buy them. They have enough money to buy out after next year anyway.
Yeah,
they got enough money to say goodbye. And once again, I don't think now we can ever say anything about Texas. Well, that's too much money to get another coach. We can't ever say that again.
No.
We never really could say it before, but now you really can't say it. But still, these schools in Texas Tech, they're looking join the Pac-12. I mean, there needs to be central time games at 11 o'clock for the Pac-12. They need to be able to be seen somehow, some way.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling you, 11:30 at night, 12 o'clock at night, after watching football and going over it all day long, dude, I don't sit back and watch the Pac-12. I don't watch Oregon football at 1 o'clock in the morning. I used to be able to, but not anymore. And all I'm looking for is what were the scores last night from what happened in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
They need teams at 11 o'clock to be playing. You know,
they need to get into that central time.
Sure, they do. They need to, they need to do this. But once again, Jeff, football still, people love football. It needs to be played at a bunch of different levels. Which level are you going to be playing on? How much money are you going to make? Streaming is a big deal now. I don't know much about streaming, but it sounds like, you know, some stream systems are going to be, what if Amazon joins and say, you know what, your little group over there, I'm going to pay you enough, but I want to be noticed too.
That's the game changer for me. If Amazon or Apple, and I don't think it's if, I think it's when Amazon and Apple decide, hey, yeah, we want a piece of this college football action too.
And they don't have to have a big piece of it. Oh, they can grab the ACC or somebody like that. But they want to be involved in football. And then they slowly and methodically start eating into some of your other stuff, ESPN. Yeah. I mean, that's just what the future looks like.
Yeah. And more importantly, Buck, everybody does have to play college football, but what are you playing for at that point? You know, I would think the top, whatever that number is, and Greg Sankey's in a great position because you've got new or unproven, or in the case of Kevin Warren in the Big Ten, in some cases, untrustworthy leadership. I don't know that there's a lot of schools in the Big Ten that trust their commissioner, given how he handled COVID and you know, we're playing, but we're not playing, and you know, now we'll play an abbreviated season, and it just seemed really disjointed from the top down in the Big Ten last year. Greg Sankey's in a position where he can make these moves, and he's got a vision, and he knows what he wants it to look like, and whatever that number is, it's 24, it's 32, it's 48, whatever it is, okay, you still got X number of schools left over from the Power Five and the next number of schools in Division One. So if these teams are playing for their championship, that next level has to play for something.
Yeah, he can't gobble up the entire Power Five. He can't gobble up the entirety of college football. I mean, what's he want? There's going to be an ACC.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, Notre Dame is Notre Dame. They're still independent, I think. They play other sports in the ACC, but he can't gobble up but so much. So, and you know, what they decide on how many teams get to be in the playoffs. So if you're also Rams, but you win your conference and you get an opportunity, you can say, at least I got a chance to get whooped. Yeah. Okay, I got a chance in this to be week to week in this playoff. So I don't know why people are so – I think people are kind of fearful of nothing, really. It's like they're fearing what's going to happen. Is the SEC going to totally gobble up everything? My thoughts earlier were, hell, that guy, the way that guy talks from the SEC – he wants to gobble up college sports. I mean, he sounds like a guy that, I want it all, you know?
It's one of those deals, Bucky. I think there's just too much money to be made. If you have the top 32 to 48, whatever that number is, brands,
mm-hmm.
who's to say you can't do a TV deal that rivals what the NFL is going to get? Or that's in that in the ballpark
could
of what
be.
The NFL is going to get. Now you're talking about not just millions, but billions of dollars.
Yeah, and how long does it, but, and like you said, how long does Amazon with this unlimited amount of money keep a hold of that till they start to get into your business a little bit, and it may take them 15 years or whatever. I mean, time is they got enough money to last till the end of time. Amazon,
yeah.
So they can get into your business and slowly eat away at what you're doing, and slowly maybe pull from you eventually down the road. Because all of this is taking a long time. This whole thing right here is taking a bunch of time to where we are right now. Even with Texas and Oklahoma headed to the SEC.
I just really wish Bob Bowlesby would have been this proactive, this forthright, have this much gumption. I don't know, at any point during his leadership to expand or improve this conference, whereas now with these two, you know, you're basically your two marquee brands, your only marquee brands are walking out the door, and now you want to go through the saber rattling and the dog and pony show and all that stuff.
Oh, he should have had teams joining the Big 12 years ago. That should have been happening, but he thought it would be stabilized, and it really kind of was stabilized, and when it just wasn't making enough money for the Big Two. It was making enough money for the other groups because the Big Two were carrying them all this time.
And that's the part, Bucky, that I love that, you know, in society we can talk about, oh, it's the culture of everybody gets a trophy. I like how sometimes we only apply that line of thinking to things that, you know, we find appropriate, and mm-hmm. other times you know, we go back and waffle. Like right now, it's I hear not all of you out there, but some I hear from some TCU people and some Baylor people, and really K-State, I think, has been the most vocal fan base about this. Well, you know, it's Texas's ego, and Oklahoma, they just want more, and they're destroying this conference, and they're going to take away, you know, money from us. So? You guys have been hanging on to that life preserver for a decade now, and you're, you know.
It does have a tint of arrogance to it, but.
It does, Bucky, but at the end of the day, like, go stand on your own 2 feet as an athletic department. Like, it's just proof that this league has existed for the last 10 years because Texas and Oklahoma wanted it to.
But you need teamwork. You need to have a group that will come together. Yeah, there are going to be some big dogs. Somebody's going to make more money. But that whole team situation of the Big 12, what the Big 8 was, what the Southwest Conference was, you need partners, and you have to understand all your partners don't have as much money as you have. All your partners don't have the brand that you have. So you got to stay in there for a while and let them bitch and complain about you being that big dog, but you know who you are. But you have to have those big dogs. But eventually, the big dog's going to look down at you and say, you know, I've been feeding you a long time.
Exactly.
You need to go over to the neighbors and get some food from over there because I've fed you long enough. And you move on. It seems like it's airing, but it's the brand. It's the brand of Texas and the reality that Texas has built that brand.
Life isn't fair.
It just sucks that they're in bed with Oklahoma. That's what. Bleh.
Life isn't fair. Life isn't equitable.
Sooners. Bleh.
You know, Bucky, I know we got to take a break, but. I want to get your thoughts on this because when you arrived at Texas with John Makovic, the Southwest Conference was in its dying days. And at the time, and I was young at the time, and I can only really vaguely remember things, and I've got to go back and read. But when the Big 12 was formed, that was the first time I remember, you know, Arkansas and South Carolina joined the SEC, and that was the first time I remember hearing the term Super Conference. But the Big 12 and the WAC too at the time, the Big 12 was one of the first super conferences, air quote super conferences,
sure,
with this Big 8 and Southwest Conference merger. From your standpoint, Bucky, being on the Texas side of it as the league was getting formed, what were your feelings? Did you feel like this was going to be a league that was built to last, or could you see the issues between Texas and Nebraska even
kind of bubbling up? Dude, I was a young coach, looking to coach at a great. Having a great opportunity to live in Austin, Texas, and to be the running coach back at Texas, I didn't give a rat's ass what conference it was in. I got to come to Texas, but when I got to Texas, it wasn't the fact that I knew they were the brand. I knew they were the brand because to me, I wanted to come to Texas or USC. But when I got here, the real brand were those dudes in Nebraska. The Cornhuskers were the brand in my mind that I always thought you're gonna have to beat them. You're gonna have to beat Nebraska. I'm talking about Nebraska now.
Yeah, back when that meant
By the way,
something.
they meant something. They held some prestige. Texas held the brand. Nebraska held a bunch of rings.
Right.
And national championships at that time. And had a lot of brothers that could absolutely dead up fly.
Yeah.
At that time.
The Big 12 at that time, because Oklahoma was not very good at that point.
Right.
Going through the John Blake era. And
Texas was just all right. They just got through firing their coach. Right?
Nebraska was, you know, when the conference was formed, Nebraska was rattling off national championships. Colorado, under Bill McCartney, was a national power at that point. You could kind of, K-State was starting to get on the rise. So just the dynamics in the league
were one thing I knew is when I got here, they didn't know what the forward pass was. So I was like, yeah. It was like, it's on.
Yeah. When you guys brought that offense in, and we're, you know, as a Texas fan, seeing, you know, just guys running option routes. You're like, oh, wow, this is next level stuff right here.
Yeah, we've been doing it in Illinois. But
you think you are the Miami Dolphins?
But that group with that Cornhusker with that big old N on the side, they turned around and handed it to a bunch of guys, and they had a bunch of offensive linemen. And I was like, wow, are we ever going to get to them? And we did.
Yeah.
And we did.
And that ring, gosh, Bucky, you need to. It's sad that you lost that ring, that 96 Big 12 ring.
It's all right.
Which one are you wearing right now?
The last Southwest Conference.
Last Southwest Conference? Yeah. All right. Well, that's.
Oh, don't let anybody know I'm wearing another ring because they're saying, oh, you're going to lose that one too. But I'm doubling down against Louisiana. Going to get my ring back and some more. Some more.
The unit play for redemption.
Huge.
On that note, Snoop, since You know what? Since Bucky's in here, let's get Bucky's old college number. How about caller 11 on the hotline? 447-3776. That'll give you folks listening on the app a chance to win a copy of Dave Campbell's Texas Football. Caller number 11 on the hotline, 447-3776. Call right now to win your copy of DCTF. Take a break, come back. Bucky Godbolt in for Craig Way. I'm Jeff Howe, Snoop Daniel behind the glass, and we will keep rolling along on a Thursday edition of Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
B&E.
I try to really eat healthy, like that
Taco Bell, right like
that,
the border.
That milkshake in the middle of the day I had, strawberry milkshake that I paid for dearly last night. She probably paid for it, too.
Light the Tower with Craig Way, Jeff Howe, and Snoop Daniel.
Actually, we have lost our way right now. Craig is on vacation, but I have called in some reinforcements. Bucky Godbolt kind enough to stay behind today after mornings with B&E and sit in here with us for 2 hours talking football, talking realignment, talking the Longhorns in 2021, talking about Bucky replacing his Big 12 championship ring via a unit play.
Huge unit play.
On the opener, so call your cousins. Are we dying Easter eggs on this one, Bucky? Are we feeling that good about this one?
Yeah. This new head coach and this staff and the players that they have, offensively, this game needs to be high 30s, low 40s. Bijan needs to start off whether his Heisman push will be this year or the following year, even in the SEC. And this offensive line, there's some big kids. There's some kids that through real life coaching and some simple things will be able to get this guy loose, because they don't have to do a lot of things with him, which is great, but they've got to get just a little bit better than they were last year. They don't even have to get a lot better. They just have to get a little bit better in this conference to get this kid out there and push for a Heisman Trophy. Yeah. I believe. I think he's a 1,400 yard rusher. Just by numbers alone on giving him the ball. And his average per carry is not going to be 8.2. They know who he is now. They're going to be 11. They're going to be 12 and some extra assistants
in the box. I hope it's not 8.2, but because that means he's not getting enough carries, you know, if it's 8.2.
Well, that means they're getting a bunch of wins, and he's sitting on the sideline too. So
that could also be the case.
Yeah.
If I'm going to listen to anybody on running backs, Bucky, it's going to be you. You coached a Heisman Trophy winner, recruited a Heisman Trophy winner, coached another guy in Priest Holmes who was – you know, we forget at the advent of fantasy football, like Priest Holmes was the premier player in fantasy football doing what he was doing with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Almost a fringe Hall of Famer in the NFL.
That's an interesting debate, whether Priest Holmes is a Hall of Famer or not, because you look at that, what was it, probably a 3 or 4 year run he had in Kansas City. That was probably
spectacular.
In my opinion, other than Marshall Faulk, it was he and Marshall Faulk, to me, were the two best backs in football at that point in time. And I want to get your take on some running backs here in a little bit.
Okay.
But right now, Snoop, did we get a winner for the copy of Dave Campbell's?
We did. It is.
Drum roll, please. Kevin Freeman from Manor.
Nice.
Good job.
So, Kevin, congratulations for winning your copy of Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine. Snoop, let's go ahead and get to the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cptours.com.
So, Bucky, let's talk about this running back group. And as we talk about, you know, when you and John Makovic came to Texas, how what you guys were doing offensively, it really fast-forwarded Texas into what modern college football was at the time in terms of passing game concepts and opening things up a little bit. But now, when you look at the way the game is played, everybody's running some form of spread offense.
Sure.
Everybody wants to be space and pace. And when the conversation all offseason has centered around, build this offense around Bijan Robinson. Build it around Bijan Robinson. Bucky, I'll take it a step further. I think this offense needs to be built around the running back position, period. Because I think when you look at your best game changers on offense, I think Bijan Robinson, I think Roschon Johnson, and I think Keelan Robinson. And again, the more Alabama people I talk to are starting to convince me that we have way undersold how good Keelan Robinson is.
Oh, not me.
Kind of playmaker he can be. So I think those three guys, Bucky, that's who the offense needs to be built around. And knowing how dynamic, how versatile, how unique Steve Sarkisian wants to be with his personnel packages, with his formations, I think you can have, I don't want to say a base two-back offense, but run a two-back offense with two tailbacks a heck of a lot more than Tom Herman did and maximize your weapons. And the Keelan Robinson part of that is you can put him in the slot and do a lot of different things, Bucky. I just think at a time where you feel like you kind of know what you've got from your tight end group and the wide receiver group, while there is some talent there, it's a lot of unproven talent. Your proven commodities, your best commodities are in that running back.
I think we're incredibly kind to football players at Texas, being on the flagship station. I think sometimes we're not honest because we want to make everybody that listens to us feel happy about the Texas Longhorns. I already know what I have in Roschon Johnson. I really do. I think his name is mentioned a lot about being, you know, he's a fabulous player. He's a good football player. But be careful of how you put him in certain categories of he's number two. He really is special as a runner. He's a good football player. He's not into Bijan's, or he's not even into the kid from Alabama's categories. He's not that type of runner. He's a good substitute guy for maybe two series a game, but you got to be careful of the way that we because we want to be nice to people.
I trust him a lot more than I trust some of these wide receivers.
Well, I don't expect the wide receivers to be in the backfield carrying the ball either. So I'm always careful about when people start saying it's almost like nice kid, nice guy, was a quarterback, came over the running back, made an incredible adjustment to that position, which still is kind of cool.
You coach that position. How hard is that adjustment?
Dude, if you're a quarterback now, he was a running, throwing quarterback in high. He wasn't just a drop back passer that he didn't take off with the football. So he knows how to run. He's a natural athlete. But when it comes to the natural part about being a two or three, he's more suited to be really a three. If you had a better two, he wouldn't be your two. That's all I'm saying. I think we get hung up in nice guy roles and all this. He did a nice thing for the team. He's a great team player. There's some things that he can do. He'll throw his face in there. He's not afraid to take a one cut and try to get you those extra yards. That's what I like about him, is his strength. But he's not going anywhere. You're going to grab him by the shirt and drag him down about 12 yards.
But what you just said about this, and it doesn't even have to be game-breaking ability.
Mm-hmm.
I like his toughness. I like his ability as a blocker. That's why you can have a two-tailback offense with he and Bijan Robinson. And Roschon Johnson's not a guy in a two-tailback offense. You say, okay, we got to get him the ball X number of times. You can hand him on misdirections. You can use him as a lead blocker. In other words,
I'll take him one-on-one against certain guys out in the open.
In other words, he's not going to be the kind of tailback that's going to need to be in a two-tailback offense that's going to need the ball or demand the ball, or you feel like you got to get him the ball X number of times. He can be there, and you can use him as you see fit. But the two guys that need to touch it, we know Bijan Robinson, whatever Sark decides that number is, needs to touch it X amount of times for you to be successful. And then Keelan Robinson, I just, when the wheels started turning for me, Bucky, on Keelan Robinson was when Sark talked about him, and was when we caught up with Sark at the Boys and Girls Club of the Austin area at their summer luncheon. And he called him kind of his gadget play guy. He's like, he's the guy, we'll put him in the slot, we'll give it to him on a jet sweep or a bubble screen and get him in space. And that, to me, should be good news to Texas fans, because if you get that kind of guy and the kind of dynamic guy that Alabama people keep telling me Texas is getting, then it really helps alleviate the loss of Jake Smith, who we knew that was potentially Jake Smith's role in this offense. It is Jordan Whittington's role, but Jordan Whittington's another guy, Bucky, that we've seen the flashes. We've seen him be productive. Can he maintain his body and stay healthy good chunk of a season?
I think so. It's just some bad luck. He's just counting those bad.
That's what I hope.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's just certain guys get hurt. I mean, you've been around great players that you thought coming out of high school were just great players, but for some odd reason, damn, this came up with his appendix came. You know, he just got a little surgery, never happened early before. You know, he's got a bruised knee that lasts for six games of the season, and they're just not healthy. And it's just kind of, I thought Jake Smith was the same. It's just kind of bad luck, and some of those things happen to players. It's not because you're not fit enough or screwed up his ankle or broke his foot on a cut. Those are those type of things. But this guy, Keelan is a special kind of player that can do a lot of different things. I originally thought that the number two ball carrier was going to be Whittington. I thought he would carry the ball from out of the slot and do some other things as a running back. More so, he'd be the second leading ball carrier. I don't want it now. After what I've seen from film of the kid that's coming from Alabama, and after I saw him in his freshman year, no, Whittington doesn't need have to be number two ball carrier. You got the number two ball carrier. It's just how you how you play that number two guy. He's got to be in games. He can't be coming in to spell. He can come in and spell your premier running back, but he has to be in the games in the first series at some other position, doing some other things with the motion. And he understands the offense. Not only do you have a talented player, but you got a talented player that understands what the head coach is looking for. That's why he's here.
And we could talk about specialty roles all we want, Buck, but Keelan Robinson is going to be in a specialty role where he knows exactly what's going to be asked.
That's true.
It's a little bit different than Whittington trying to adjust to it, or
he also
what
doesn't
the adjustment would have been for Jake Smith.
He doesn't also have to have a mauling group up front. That's the important part. If I'm talking running backs, then I'm talking about your offensive line. Your tackle has got to be something special, I believe, in the run game. You know, this isn't a team that's going to hump it up inside. They're still going to go off tackle because they have a running back that likes to be off tackle. He's already told you he liked the counter. That's all I have to hear from the guy. Yeah. What's your favorite play? The counter. Well, my offensive coordinator and myself are spending our time figuring out how many different ways can we run the counter.
Out of different personnel, out of different formations.
How can we make this kid happy and what he really likes? He understands kickouts. He understands pin blocks. He understands how to set up. How do we set up these guys on the outside, and what do I have to do to secure the inside with penetration? That's why some of these guys at the offensive guard, they're going to have to be able to block down, and they can't be whiffers. This group has whiffed before. I've seen them flat out whiff guys. They can't be whiffers. They got to give me a piece.
Yeah. Looking at the numbers, and Matt Butler broke it down, and Matt, who is my co-host on the Longhorn Blitz podcast with Rob Babers, Matt broke it down. And, you know, you look at the Texas run game last year under Tom Herman, it wasn't very diverse. It was almost 75% to 80%, maybe even more than that, probably closer to 85%. Some type of zone scheme, whether it's inside zone, outside zone, and probably about 15% or less gap schemes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you look at Sark, and granted, look, when you've got an offensive line full of guys that are going to play in the National Football League, you've got a Doak Walker Award winner at running back, and you can go off the RPO and play action and throw it to a Heisman winner on the outside. You can kind of do whatever you want. But Alabama, it was like a 55 or 45 less split in terms of gap and zone. You don't know what they're going to do. They're unpredictable. And when I think about this running game, you know, I'd like to go back to, if you go back and look at Brian Harsin's first season at Texas, when the Garrett Gilbert thing didn't work out, mm-hmm. and he's saying, okay, I've got two inexperienced quarterbacks. The passing game isn't going to be what we hang our hat on, but what can we do? We came up with that package. I called it the Fozzie Bear package, put Fozzie Whitaker in that wildcat position and snapping the ball. But then he realized at some point, you know what? Our best players right now, and at the time they were Fozzie Whitaker, Joe Bergeron, and Malcolm Brown. And they just decided, you know what? We're just going to have this diverse run game. It's a lot of pin and pull stuff,
sure,
a lot of counters. And I like those type of schemes, Bucky, four and off. Like, it takes so long. I don't think people realize, and you've been around some really good offensive line coaches, it takes a really long time and a lot of work for you to become a really good zone-blocking offensive line.
Yeah, you've got to have those type of players. But if you have players that are nimble and athletic, that can pull, and somebody can block down, and they can pull around you, I don't need you to kill them. I just need you to get in their way. Let me, as the running back, let me set it up. You don't have to set me up.
I love those. I love a more gap scheme based running game, a more diverse running game, because if you can't just overpower people at the point of attack, you can do things like Brian Harsin did in 2011 when Texas actually had a top 25 run game nationally.
Yeah.
You can create leverage and angles and things to help out an offensive line that maybe they're not overpowering, but there's enough that they do well enough to, if you can just create some angles, create some space, now you've got running backs. If you've got the right group of running backs, they can go work off that and do what they do.
This run game was so simplistic last year that we as fans knew what was coming. We knew when Sam was going to do that. Sam was almost leaning to where he was going and what he was doing. There were just certain keys that were just given. I mean, you could just you knew by depth. You knew by. If I'm a defense, I'm looking at Sam and I'm knowing some of the things he does with his hands, with his shoulders, how one is lower. I'm going this way. I'm ready to – because I got to fend off some, because I'm not shaking and baking anybody.
Right.
Eventually I'm going to run them over. I got to prepare myself for contact. But it was so simplistic, and that team won seven games. That group won seven games last year with that simplistic Simbo offense that they ran out there against people. Seriously.
Yeah.
So it means that they had some talent there, and the offensive line, it just were – that group was so undercoached. But don't worry about being overcoached now. Don't worry about all of a sudden. Yeah. And I think this coach, the coach that they have now on the offensive line, he's going to understand what he has at running back. He's had great running backs at Alabama. They've been around great players. They've been around players that you don't need to have monster offensive line, well, which they did, but you also have running backs that know how to set up blocks. The responsibility of the running back is just as important as when we say, well, that offensive lineman, he did that or he did that. My key is don't whiff. Don't whiff. Please don't whiff. Yeah. Please don't put me in a situation where you totally whiff and I got to see where your shoulders are going to be. I got to know where your feet and your body is. Running back is it's a natural position, but there's some certain techniques that you set up the guy on the other side of that big son of a gun that's doing whatever he does. Yeah. You have a responsibility to that. And I've had players. Troy Stafford at Boston College was rookie of the year for the Miami Dolphins, coaching him. Kenny Bell in the same backfield that played for the Denver Broncos. Steve Strahan, who played for the Oakland Raiders. I had all three of those dudes in the same. And then I had one receiver at Boston College named Kelvin Martin that played and was my punt returner. So those guys had
a damn good punt returner,
yeah,
too. But
the innate ability to set up things that the offensive line was just kind of, they're there.
Yeah.
Just don't whiff. And you have these kids here that are big and wide and long-armed and if you had to grab their ass, reach out and grab, but just don't get your running back killed.
Yeah.
This offense can really be something special with a guy like Sark that can have that stuff really, really set up in different ways, as you say, from so many, you know, with all the 20s and different personnel that they're going to run out there. But you also have to take your running back, and I don't want to run a kid 30 or 40 times, maybe so I can get my ring in that first game you're running 40 times, but he doesn't have to. If his average goes from 8.2 to 5.9 or 6.0, you're going to win a lot of games in this offense. And if you have the receivers that you really need to have just two of them that are kind of special, and the rest of them can catch. I don't mean hitting you in the face mask. I don't mean the regular catch that most receivers, when we look around the country, make. What you can't do is you can't compare these players and start saying, we have really good talented players too. You don't have talented players like Sark is used to at Alabama.
No.
Steve is going to figure out in the next 3 years what type of player he has. The others are going to fall by the wayside. Seriously.
No,
they will fall by the wayside, because when he brings in the kind of speed that he's looking for here and he gets them out of the state of Texas, it's going to be tremendous what he does.
You know, the term, Bucky, a lot of people can look at it however you want. When you recruit over guys, in other words, this new staff, what you should hope for is they just bring in guys that are so talented, that are ready to play right away, that guys that are going to be 3 or 4 and done to the National Football League, that you say, you know what? This guy's worked hard. He's a good kid, but man, a freshman I just brought in, he's got to play. He's got to be on the field.
I'm going to always say, in a coaching point, that coaching matters, but eventually the talent outweighs the coaching.
Yeah.
If you keep it up, if you're at a place like Texas, Alabama, Notre Dame, yeah, you can coach, but eventually the talent will outweigh the coaching. That's how you get championship teams. And, you know, as good a coach as Nick Saban is, the talent outweighs his coaching.
Yeah.
They're just that talented. Those players are just that talent. And I think Sark is online. How long it takes, I don't know, but you can't replace them every 3 whatever years. But you knew the other guys, they didn't have it. It was too simplistic, especially on the offensive end with Tom Herman. I mean, it's just the basic fundamentals are this guy is hot. Why is he on a bench? What are you doing, Stan Drayton? Are you afraid to go into the head coach and say, you know, I've been coaching a long time. Coach, I know I could get fired from my $500,000 job, but Bijan Robinson should be carrying the ball a lot more than we're doing. By the way, that you got to keep your job, by the way, with Sark, but in a long span of things, you could have lost your job because you didn't go in and say, that guy got to have the ball. This is ridiculous.
It's frustrating for Texas fans too, Bucky, when you see, you know, Lincoln Riley's figured out who he is as a coach.
Yes.
And the guys he knows need, like, 2 years ago, I don't know how many times CeeDee Lamb touched the ball, but he touched it as much as he needed to for Oklahoma to win ball games. At Iowa State, Breece Hall's going to touch it as much as he needs to for them to win football games.
For Sark, he needs to understand this. Matt Campbell has already said, he didn't even shy away from the fact that he said that Breece Hall is going to be in the Heisman hunt. And you know what that tells me? It doesn't tell me that they just have a good team. that guy's going to get the ball as many times as it takes for them to win games. That guy is their bread and butter. You can talk about their tight ends. They have other. But Breece Hall is one of those guys above and beyond. You know what I'm saying? He's like Land Rover, above and beyond. I mean, that guy is going to get the ball a lot. And the head coach is even letting you know in the Big 12, I'm not afraid to tell you, he's going to be in the Heisman chase. If he's healthy, I'm going to give him enough carries. He was the leading rusher in the nation last year. Yeah. Think I'm not going to give him the ball?
Yeah, I know we got to take a break, but you know, Tom Herman logic, the one point that I always hated making Buck. Well, I mean, we had Zeke Elliott at Ohio State, and we managed his carries.
I hear Stan Drayden had him, too.
You had in front of Zeke Elliott, you had Carlos Hyde, who was a 1,500-yard back, and you had Braxton Miller, who was a 1,000-yard rusher quarterback. You had some dudes in front of him, but you didn't have those same dudes in front of Bijan Robinson.
Dude, you got a coach like your job is on the line every year. Every game. Because your job is on the line
Texas,
every year.
It really seems like it is. Yes. You've been in that chair.
Yeah.
All right, take a break, come back. Inconceivable coming up next. Bucky Godbolt sitting in for Craig Way. Jeff Howe, Snoop Daniel here with you on a Thursday edition of Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
It is important to know that our good friend Tom McKay in Audiovisual Consultations can help set you up if you don't like or...
I don't think I miss what you think I miss.
Inconceivable means it's brought to you by our good friend Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and the fine folks at Austin Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. If you or your athlete have suffered an injury that requires orthopedic attention, visit them at austin-orthopedics.com. That's Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and the fine folks at Austin Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Bucky, we've got one for Inconceivable today. We almost need the baked potato story because we need something to uplift us after this story I'm going to read.
Oh, no.
Two Texas teen girls discovered the remains of a 25-year-old man, stole his jewelry, and Snoop, this is where one of your favorite staples of Inconceivable, discovered the remains of a 25-year-old man, stole his jewelry, and posted video of the macabre act on Snapchat. The man is believed to have hanged himself in a Medina Valley drainage ditch. The girls, 17 and 16 years old, face felony charges of theft from a human corpse in connection with the Monday morning incident. According to the Bexar County Sheriff's Office, a homicide investigator said they had ruled out foul play and believed the man's death was a suicide. He was found hanging from a roadside railing by, quote, what appeared to be a shirt. According to the sheriff's office, after the girl stumbled onto the body, they called another friend who called 911 at around 8:30 a.m. Monday. According to investigators, the teens told deputies they were walking to a local gas station and saw something in the drainage ditch. They went closer to take a look and found the victim. But on Tuesday, investigators said they learned a video circulating on social media that showed the scene before deputies arrived. It allegedly showed the 17-year-old taking a gold necklace off of the dead man's chest. According to Fox San Antonio, the video was sent anonymously to the Bexar County Sheriff's Office. Investigators saw the older teen and said they recognized her as a witness at the scene. According to the arrest affidavit, the friend told them she did it because the necklace, quote, matched her fashion style. Boy, Bucky, I have a term for people like this. It's people that probably need to be boiled in oil and have their fat sold for soap if you're going to go do something like that.
Nice piece of equipment, nice piece of jewelry, but dead dude, no, I'm not taking it off dead dude.
No, that's...
No, I'm not wearing it.
Yeah.
She didn't sell it. She was going to wear it.
And it's not just that, Bucky. They took video of it and posted it on Snapchat.
Well, I understand dumb. I mean, I got that part. There's a lot of that going on all over the place. We already know that's dumb, but...